Christianity is one generation from extinction. Now just let that settle with you for just a little bit, and we're going to build into that today. Christianity is one generation from extinction. Now some of you may already be up in arms because we know that the church will last forever. We've read Revelation. We know that Jesus and God win. But it's up to us to make sure that it's passed from our generation to the next generation, and so on and so forth. George Barna, Barna Research Center, and I just really appreciate some of his surveys. Does a lot of different ones, but he does a lot on religion in America and religion in the world. And I just want to read you a couple of things that he said. It says, when it comes to church engagement, those who attended Sunday school or other religious programs as children or teens are much more likely than those without such experiences to attend church and have an active faith as adults. That shouldn't surprise us, should it? But it also emphasizes how important a ministry to young people and preschoolers and children in our church is so vital. But he goes on to say this: among those who frequently attended religious programs as teenagers, 58% said they had attended a worship in the last week. And that's when they became adults. So these are surveys of adults, not of teenagers. So in other words, 58% of those that attended church as a child were regular attenders of church when they became adults. Speaks volumes to us. Said the highest proportion of unchurched adults were found among those who had never attended as children or teenagers. Weekly activities as a child and weekly or monthly activities as a teen were connected with the lowest levels of disconnection from the church. So this is kind of no-brainer for those of us in the church, but I think it emphasizes kind of the foundation of where I want to be today. Adults that do not attend church as a child are 3 times more unlikely to ever accept Christ. Now let that sink in just a little bit. Adults who never attended a Sunday school, a vacation Bible school, a summer camp as a child are 3 times more likely to never accept Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. So what does that say to you and I? Well, I think one of the first things it says to me is that we have to make sure that we are doing the best we can to reach young people for Christ. Young people in our families, young people in our neighborhoods, young people in our communities, and even young people in our church. That's kind of the call. That's the charge that we have today. You know, I've said earlier, Christianity is one generation from extinction. And we think a lot about extinction. You know, when we think about environmentalists, and I'm not making good news or bad news about environmentalists. I know that Allison, you know, she went on this thing when she worked for us at Camp Allendale, and she counted raccoons at night. Not everybody would get into that, but Allison seemed to really enjoy that. Allison, I know you're out there somewhere, dear. You're hiding in the dark. But we hear, thank you. I'm the back row. Why are you in the back row? Anyway, we know that there's a lot of talk about extinctions. You know, and so sometimes if you're doing a highway, and perhaps you had to do something, I don't know whether you had to do an environmental study when you built your new facility. But we're constantly concerned about things going extinct. And we know basically the definition of extinction is that they no longer exist. So how do we, in our generation, and in the generation above me and below me, And I have a real problem going on right now because Nancy and I am 54. I'm not sure what Nancy is. I don't quite remember, but she is 2 months and 5 days older than me. But do y'all remember when, you know, and I didn't even notice on your card, but you know those cards when you go to places and they do those age range things where they say, you know, you're 18 to 18 to 29 or 30 to 39, you know, doesn't it just kill you when you move up a checkbox? It does, doesn't it? Let's face it. And so I would say if we're going to make anything extinct in this world, we need to make checkboxes about age extinct. So you guys work on that one. But anyway, Proverbs 22:6, and it's on the screen, and it's very familiar with all of us. It says this: train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. And we're not going to debate the whole situation of this, and chances are, quite honestly, there's some people in this audience today that really did that, but yet their children still are not living for God. And so it kind of really gets to be a real challenge when we see a promise like that in Proverbs that tells us that if we train them up the way that we see God wants them to go, they'll not depart from it. But that is a promise. So there must be something a little deeper than that. Well, another passage, and if you got your scriptures, you can turn to it. If not, I'll just share it with you. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 5 through 7 says this: you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. See, Proverbs 22, it just sounds so cut and dry. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. Okay? It's kind of like, you know, that's the quick version. If you were like putting something, adding a new software package into your computer, you might either do the condensed version or the full version. So the condensed one is the quick answer. And then that's when we start to think, well, I did that. But then the Deuteronomy passage really digs into the crux of that. What does it mean to train up a child? Well, in the last part of that, it says, you shall teach them diligently. Talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Ken Ham, who is a big part of the Answers in Genesis, the Creation Museum over here in Ohio, he wrote a book called Already Gone, and this is what he said: regardless of what's happening in the Sunday school, youth groups, the pulpit, and Bible studies of your church, the responsibility for ministry to our children has never been removed from parents. Now, those of you that are parents this morning, this is not a slam against you. In fact, at the end, we're all going to get slammed. Just encourage everybody that way. But it's not intended to be a slam, but it's a realization of what we're up against in our society. The average youth group person, these guys sitting on the front row, I appreciate so much you guys sitting on the front row. Does Eric kick back some money to you guys for you to sit on the front? I'm just curious. Most of the time, youth group kids sit in the back, but we're glad you're up here close. I'll try not to, on you. But the average child, if they were in Sunday school, in church every Sunday, year round, that's what? 208 hours. Throw in a week of camp, CIY, Believe, some sort of special conference, that might give you another 100 hours. How many hours are in a year? A lot more than 300. You see, folks, even those of us that are a part of Christ's body, a church, we've turned over so much of our rearing and our nurturing of our children to other people. And that needs to change. As he said here, the responsibility for ministering to our children has never been anywhere else but in the eyes of the parents. And it's not, and I'm not trying to debate social issues and stuff this morning, but we know we see so much crime and violence in our area. And I'm not just talking downtown Indianapolis, I'm talking Johnson County and other places. And so much of it can be traced back to families without a mother, without a father, or disengaged parents. that don't engage themselves. And so they put the raising of their children onto the church or onto the schools or onto other people. The charge in scriptures is that parents are to be the ones that are to take part of that. You know, and probably our best example of that is Timothy. We know a lot about Timothy. Paul wrote a couple of books to Timothy. Timothy traveled with Paul. And often Timothy was referred to as Paul's son in the faith. When you think about through the books of 1 Timothy, 1 and 2 Timothy, we see instruct from a pure heart, a good conscience, and a sincere faith. Fight the good fight. Keep the faith. Preach the word. Reprove. Exhort. Those are all things that Paul wrote to Timothy. But in actuality, Timothy's foundation came from who? You Bible scholars? Lois and Eunice, his grandma and his mother. Because Timothy writes in 2 Timothy, or Paul, excuse me, Paul writes to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1:5, I am reminded of your sincere faith which first lived in your grandmother, Lois, in your mother, Eunice, and I am persuaded now lives in you also. You see, the thing that Timothy's family had that we need to regain if we've lost it is there was a passing down from one generation to another, the things of God. And when we think about this idea this morning, Christianity is one generation from extinction. It's not in the world because we know God wins. We've read the final chapter. But could it be that in your family? Those of us that are parents or grandparents, and I'm sure I have members of my family that are not in the Lord. And I know you probably have some of yours, and it's so heartbreaking to know that maybe your grandchildren are being raised in a home that doesn't have Christ at the center. And maybe you feel like you've really messed up your generation and your children because something you did something wrong. But that's not necessarily the case, because we have got to understand that under God's free will, we all have that choice. And yes, it's heartbreaking to see those that don't walk alongside us in our faith, that are part of our family. But as parents, we have a challenge and an opportunity to be the ones to continue that generation from ours to the next. You know, very quickly, Barna in his talking about parenting, he did some surveying, and he kind of came up with basically three types of how we parent today. And I'm just going to go through these really quick. This is not intended to be a self-reflection. I know very few of you, and so it wasn't like I was thinking about, oh, the Joneses, they really fit this one. You know, that type of thing. But anyway, the first one is parenting by default. And it's characterized by the path of least resistance. Some of us might call this the Rodney King parenting style of method. You remember Rodney King? Can't we all just get along? You know, where moms and dads are kind of relegated to kind of being coaches and cheerleaders for their children and just kind of let them kind of guide themselves, and just don't, dad's working and he's got, you know, 50 hours at work and mom's got a job, and so we don't want anything stress when we get home. So, you know, does our 14-year-old, dad, can I have the car? Sure, son, take the car. You know, that wouldn't happen, but you know what I'm saying? Where we really don't take any stands. We just kind of go helter-skelter. This kind of parent also might be the one that quite frankly would say, kids are going to be kids. If they're going to drink, I'd just soon have them drinking in my basement where I can watch them. And we know that goes on. We've seen that in the news here locally. I had a good friend of mine that grew up, and she became a good friend of Nancy and mine through our church. And she said, you know, it wasn't until I came to church that I didn't realize everybody's parents didn't buy beer for them. Parenting by default. And then there's trial and error parenting. Those that kind of experiment with different discipline techniques, and they compare themselves to others. And the tragic of that is, you know, they compare themselves to others, but they also compare their children to others. Why can't you be like Jim, your friend? He sits on the front row at church. He sings in the praise band. He's always at youth group. Why can't you be like him? Well, you know what that causes, don't you? Just the opposite. That challenge of reversal of roles. And finally, a part of that is, the big question is my children behaving better than someone else's child? And so if my child is the one singing in the praise band and sitting on the front row, then look at me. Well, finally, and where we want to hit and then kind of draw us all into this together, and this isn't a parenting seminar, this is a reaching youth challenge this morning. Finally, though, is the kind that Barna likes to call revolutionary parenting. And this is how he says this. Parenting by default and trial and error parenting are both approaches that enable parents to raise their children, get this, without the effort of defining their life. Barna explains, revolutionary parenting, which is based on one's faith in God, makes parenting a priority. Now, already in that little quote, we in our society would have a problem. Because what it says there is that as a parent, as a godly parent, I'm trying to mold my child into what God wants them to be. Our society would tell us, oh no, you need to let your child be just the way they are. And unfortunately, over the last two or three weeks, we see two major issues that our society has now kind of pumped through the forefront, and that is legalizing gay marriage, defining gay marriage just no different than heterosexual marriage. And then this week, the judgment that girls even down to 11 years old can get a morning after pill. You see, they would look at us as Christians, and they would look at us as Christian parents and say, you're taking away your child's rights. And I just think there will be a day when some godly family will be sued or their children will be taken away because of forcing them or encouraging them to consider God or taking them to youth group or sending them to a religious camp. That's the challenge that we face, my friends, in that respect. You know, I have three daughters, and I have six grandchildren. If you want pictures, I could actually put them here on the TV. I've got them on my iPad. But as my children were growing up, you know how parents, you lose your identity. My mom's here today, and before we had our first grandchild, their first grandchild, not my first grandchild, mom and dad's first grandchild, whenever they would come see Nancy and I, they'd always bring us something. Shirt, you know, a pair of jeans, something for Nancy's kitchen, just some little something that mom or dad had found that they wanted us to have. Renee comes along, granddaughter number one. Do you think they continued bringing us stuff? No. It was always, oh, this cute little Easter outfit or this Valentine's Day dress or McDonald's coupons or, you know, everything was centered around that person. And then as my kids got older, I was no longer Randy the camp manager or Randy the elder at church or Randy Pym the coordinator of the area basketball league. I was Melissa's dad or Renee's dad or Christy's dad. And I was okay with that. And those of you who have lost your identity or remember this time, you're okay with that. You don't mind being identified by your children. But you see, as our children become adults, that even makes it more important to be identified as Renee's dad or Christy's dad or Melissa's dad. I am ecstatic. I am so proud of my daughters. And when we were at church last Sunday where my youngest daughter, Melissa, her husband's a youth minister. And, you know, people, and some of you did it this morning, when people would see somebody, I'd start to say strange. I'm not strange, but new. You know, they walk up to you and say, hi, I'm so-and-so, welcome to church. And I would say, I'm Randy, this is my wife Nancy, we're Melissa Jones's parents. Oh, Melissa! Doesn't that do your heart good? You see, my friends, if we're revolutionary parents, we are molding our child's lives. You know, one of my favorite comedies was The Cosby Show. Kids, you might be able to catch it on Netflix now, by the way. But you know, one of the things that he would say, you know, I brought you into this world, and what? And I can take you out. And the challenge with that, folks, is that, yes, we can't do that. We know that. But what we can do, though, is create in them the desire to love God and to nurture that relationship, even on days when they don't necessarily want to do it, so that when they stand firm as an adult, they can truly stand firm. Well, that's enough on parents, because, again, I'm not trying to be down on parents today. But I want to talk about what can we do? What can all of us do to reach this young generation? Because, you know, Hillary Clinton and I don't agree on very few things at all, but quite a few years ago, she wrote a book called It Takes a Village. And it was addressing the idea of our society, and we can still agree with this, our society, parents and families are under attack, both legally through our government, but also just socially. Satan is attacking constantly the core values of the family. Unfortunately, there are almost as many divorces in Christian homes as there are non-Christian homes. And so this idea of continuing this generation of children that establish a relationship with God and pass it down, it's under attack. So what can we do? What can all of us in this room do? Well, the first thing that I kind of think about in that real idea is we really need to be youther friendly. Now, some of you guys did not live during this era, but when computers first came out, they used the term user friendly. They, you know, that was kind of the way that they would get people into that. And we got our first computer when I was 24 years old, and I was a youth minister in Missouri. And I used it for, it was really cool, I used it for a database, posters. I actually had a mail merge thing. And then I could play games on it because it was my Commodore 64. And again, most of you don't even know what I'm talking about. That's okay. But, you know, it also wasn't just about maybe 15 years ago that they started color coding the wires on the back of a computer. Did you know that? Because when I first got our first computer, and many of you in this room, Neil can probably attest to this and others, you used to get a computer and all the cords were black and all the plugins on the back were silver. And you had these instructions and you had to figure out where did the microphone go, where did the printer cord go, all those type of things. That was not very user friendly. Our challenge in the church today is we need to be more youther friendly. Well, how do we do that? Well, we don't just do it with games and carnivals and toys. Unfortunately, many of our churches have think that that's what we do, that we just have parties. And so we got kids in the building, then we're changing their lives for Christ. But that's not necessarily the best way to do that. You know, one of the things that Timothy was charged by Paul was 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. Anybody tell me what that is before I even read it? Don't let anyone look down on you because you're young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity. Now, I was a youth minister. I can remember my youth minister using this. I don't know how many times at camp that I have heard this at a campfire, for especially, you know, talking to high school kids, middle school kids, you know, to be an example, to reach out to the kids around you and all that. And that all makes tons of sense. The interesting thing about this, though, guess how old Timothy was when this was written to him? He's about 40 years old. Middle-aged. Okay, maybe not middle-aged, but, you know, middle age, one of those things that changes, doesn't it? As you change, it changes. So Paul wasn't necessarily telling kids, nothing against kids, to be an example. He was telling basically middle-aged adults that you need to be an example to those older than you, but also those younger than you. So how are we going to be more youth-friendly in the church? Well, I think the prescription is right here in this passage. It says, let no one look down on you because you are young. And so the challenge there for those of us that are no longer young is not to look down on young people just because they are young. Those of you that work in a multi-staff environment, you probably have had the young guy straight out of college come to your work and got all the answers. You know, and maybe, you know, they maybe have a master's and you graduate, you got a high school degree. And we know that there's this kind of this chasm, if you will, between book knowledge and practical knowledge. My dad worked in an explosive factory for 41 years. They made dynamite construction explosives. And it was not a safe environment, and they had tons of rules and guidelines, things you had to be careful about. And one of the interesting things was that I worked there 2 summers, by the way, and I got to cut weeds. In fact, everybody had hard hats except the college guys that cut weeds, because what we did, we sickled the weeds off these big bunkers. And about the second week I was there, I said, so just curious, but what's in these bunkers? Oh, that's where all the completed dynamite is. That's where we store it until we take it off, and we can't use a gas-powered mower or anything around them. So that's why you guys are out there with the old, you know, whackers practicing your golf swing and cutting these big bunkers of weeds. And so about the third week I was there, I said, well, why is it that everybody here has hard hats except us college guys? Well, my supervisor, who I realized was a real wise joker, he said, well, the way we see it, if that bunker blows up, hard hat's not going to do you any good. But about 5 years later, 3 engineers, college degree engineers, were killed because one of the pipes actually was full of dynamite. It had hardened. Okay, this is explosives. It had hardened. They took a metal screwdriver and a metal hammer and decided they were going to enlarge it. All three of these guys had masters in chemistry, but yet they didn't have the common sense to understand you don't use a metal screwdriver hitting explosives that ignite with a spark. And so we have to make sure that we put young people in a proper perspective, that we grasp where they are. And yeah, sometimes they're disrespectful. Sometimes they dress differently than us. Sometimes they talk differently than us. Have you ever tried to text with a 17-year-old? Of course you have, because you're 17. But you know, just when I think I've got all the little IDK, which is I don't know, you know, all the different little things, then a new one pops into it. And then I have to, okay, what did you mean by that? Because I don't understand that one. But we need to be those examples to those. How are we of doing that? How about in church activities? Are you an example? You know, one of the things that we have to consider ourselves is, do we want our young people to worship? Do we want them to praise? Do we want them to sing? Do we want them to participate? Then how are you doing that? When they look around the room, do they see you participating in the worship and the praise and the prayer time? How about at sporting events? How are you there? You know, and I got to admit, I've gone to the altar and I've asked for forgiveness for many times when I misspoke at a sporting event. I got to admit, I also got it from my mama. And so, you know, it passed down from one generation to the next. But how are you at those things where they see you under pressure? Not only just your own children, but the children in the church. You know, obviously you guys probably bump into each other at the mall and restaurants and places like that. Are you being an example of someone that young people can look up to and say, man, when I'm 40, when I'm 50, when I'm 60, I want to be like that person. When I was growing up, mom and dad took me to church quite a bit, and then we kind of faded away for a while and had a youth minister come and got us going again. But I had a Jewish, a a true by heritage Jewish Christian painter. And he at 70 years old, he hired me at 16 to be his assistant. Oh my gosh, what a trip. Every day at lunch, we packed our own lunch, and he would eat sardines every day. I tried to be upwind from him. But we would sit there, and we would talk, and he would always, whenever I finally caught on to this phrase, the whole story is, when he would say that, it was something I needed to listen to. And I'm just curious this morning, how many of you are pouring your life into a child at whatever age you are? It could be a child in the youth group. It could be a grandchild. It could be a neighborhood child. It could be a big brother or big sister situation. You see, we're not going to pass this idea of Christianity on to the next generation unless we're actively involved in doing it in some way. Your grandchildren may not be around here. You may not be able to have that kind of relationship with them. But you can also become on Facebook and message them and learn that technology to be able to do those type of things that show that to them in some special way. How about in the restaurant this afternoon? You know, two of my daughters were waitresses. And one of them came home one Sunday from being a waitress. And she said, Dad said, I just didn't have a good day. And I said, well, why not? I said, well, it was Sunday. And said, I had some of the grumpiest people today. And they were so picky. And they didn't leave a very good tip. And they were all dressed like they just got out of church. And she had made a comment to one of the other waitresses that had been there for quite a long time. And she said, well, you can always tell the people that have gone to church on Sunday because they're the ones that dress a little nicer than everybody else. They demand a little more and they tip a little less. And maybe you fit into that category, maybe you don't. But unfortunately, friends, that's why we have to think so much about the example that we're portraying. I caught myself one day at Walmart, and I'm trying to draw this to a close because I know we're running out of time, but I caught myself at Walmart one day and really got upset. I'm diabetic, my sugars were low, I was grouchy, I needed to eat, and this clerk messed up something. And I'm not a foul-mouthed talker, I've never really have been, so I didn't cuss her out, but I know that my looks and my voice and my tone. And then when it was all said and done, and then I said, I need to charge that to Camp Allendale. And then I felt really, really, really bad. So you see, my friends, how can we pass on Christ to the next generation? Well, we do it by our example. We do it by how we live. We do it by instruction. We do it by personally involve ourselves in the lives of other people. And finally, and, you know, we always throw this one in, every good preacher does, but we can pray. You know, I have a brother right now, quite honestly, that's not in the Lord, and I pray for him and his family about every week. You probably have relatives. You have neighbors. You know, and maybe everything you have tried, and men, maybe you have a son that you just can't see. Every time you try to talk to him about this, it just goes the wrong direction. You need to ask God to be a part of that. Ask God to send other people into their lives that might make an impact on them that you can't. And so we need to pray for that. We need to pray for our youth workers and our ministers and our children's ministers and so on. And we need to pray for our parents. Those of you that aren't parents here, I would challenge you this morning to look around this room, whether you tell them or not, start to pray for one of the families here. You know, and in a lighthearted way, just think about how many of these guys and gals they got to teach how to drive here in the next 2 or 3 years. That needs a lot of prayer. But just pray for them to be the spiritual leaders of their homes so that these guys and gals that are sitting up front right now will still be here 20 and 30 and 40 years from now. You know, when I was a youth minister, I can remember looking at guys around me that had successful youth ministries. And, you know, I always, and you know, it was so cool to see a teenager give a testimony and those type of things. But I guess because I'm getting older, but I think the people that I want to hold up to kids and to myself are not necessarily 20 and 30 years old, but they're 60 and 70 and 80. Because you and I both know that as we walk through this life in every stage of our life, there are things that could drag us away from God. And young people, middle-aged people, think of someone that has walked the walk and talked the talk year after year after year. And those are the ones that are to model our lives after. Nancy's mother passed away a couple years ago. The last 3 or 4 years of her life, she had dementia, Alzheimer's, and the last 6 months or so, it was very, very difficult, especially for Nancy's sister that lived right there, and we were, you know, we tried to get there when we could, other siblings, but Zona was her name, and she had to do a procedure that put her under anesthetic. And quite honestly, the Alzheimer's was kind of, it wasn't caused because of anesthetic, but they said it actually kind of got it going quicker. And so for 3 or 4 weeks before this procedure, Valmar, our sister, had said that Mom wouldn't make any sense at all. And so they're sitting in the waiting room getting ready for her to go in to do this procedure. And especially the last week, Mom was just talking random thoughts, just bouncing around, bouncing off the wall, you know, talking about she used to be a school teacher and talking about she had to get back to class and take care of the kids and it was her lunch duty day and all things like that. And then all of a sudden she started saying, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son." And so Velma, you know, my goodness, Mom's actually making sense. And so Velma said the rest of John 3:16 with her. And then Zona, our mom, mother-in-law, said, "Write that down for me." And so Velma wrote it down for her. She just pulled something out. She pulled out, it was the back of something in her purse, and she wrote it down. And then Zona wrote, "I believe Zona Stout." And you talk about passing something down from one generation to the next. For as long as her family has breath, we will share that story with our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren and the children before. You see, my friends, Christianity is within one generation of extinction, perhaps in America. It's a sobering thought, but we know that our society is moving in the wrong direction. Perhaps even in the Church of Bluff Creek. But it's up to you and I to make sure that it's not close to extinction in our own families. And I just want to challenge you with that. I don't want to be so Debbie Downer today. I just want to encourage you. Because again, we know the end of the story, don't we? We know who wins. That needs to be our motivation for being the example, for praying. Parents, for putting your children above everything else in your schedule, to prioritize that they're a part of a godly home, because we know who wins. Let's pray. Father, I just want to thank you so very much for this opportunity to share today. And God, it's a sobering responsibility to know that you've given us all these blessings, but you've also called us to bestow those blessings and those things onto the generation after us. And Lord, I pray that each one of us in this room can really think about how can we better reach young people, whether it's those in our own family, whether it's those here in the church, or whether it's those that we come in contact in the community. God, instill in us the desire to spread your word so that more may hear. In your son's name I pray. Amen.